Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms, enjoying the season, and we've got a great gift for you. It's Ask the Guys Your Amazing Questions and Our Attempt at Answers today on the Real Estate Guys radio program. Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way for you to get everything you've dreamed of? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms. I'd like to personally invite you to attend Create Your Future, the 2017 Goals Retreat, January 6th through 8th in beautiful San Diego, California. This unique weekend has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the hundreds of people that have attended. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com and click events or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the 2017 Goals Retreat on the first weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com to register. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723, extension 18, today. Forbes rated Memphis the best cash flow market in the nation. And our good friend Terry Kerr at Mid-South Homebuyers has been the premier turnkey rental property provider in Memphis for over 13 years. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, Terry has renovated over 750 houses. Real Estate Guys listeners have snapped up hundreds. Discover what these satisfied investors already know. Mid-South's properties are completely renovated with a one-year warranty and a lifelong rental guarantee. They're affordable, well-managed, and easy to own. Perfect for beginning investors and veterans alike. Get in on the action. Contact Terry and his team via email at midsouth@realestateguysradio.com. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. Happy holidays. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, our financial strategist and co-host, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
Hey there. It is time for us to reach into the mailbag, as they say. We got lots of great input from our listeners, which is one of the most awesome things about having this program. And of course, we every few weeks like to do this Ask the Guys show, where you ask questions about real estate. We got a bunch of good questions this week, and we're going to do our best to answer as many as we can. The only disclaimers are we are not tax professionals or attorneys, and we do not give advice. We simply give ideas and information. So with that caveat, here we go. Our first question comes from Mark in Little Rock, Arkansas. He says, I'm a longtime listener, first-time asker. Guys, I really do love the show. It's made many a commute feel shorter. I'm working through lining out my personal investment philosophy and equity happens, and I'm wondering, once that is done, how do I match that up to real estate investment types, products, and options? Thanks. All right, well, that is a great question, Mark, and I don't mean question Mark. I mean question, comma, Mark. And in our book, Equity Happens, we talk about personal investment philosophy. And if you ever come to one of our Real Estate Guys field trips, you'll go through an exercise where we do personal investment philosophy. And really, the whole idea is that every investor is different. Your resources are different. Your goals are different. Your risk tolerance is different. And the exercise in the book is about you figuring out who you are as an investor. Why is it that you're interested in real estate? What do you want it to do for you? And once you've gone through that very powerful process, and the reason it's so powerful, by the way, is if you haven't done it, then potentially any deal that comes across your desk seems like it could be good. As soon as you get really clear on who you are as an investor, you're going to say no. And no is a good thing to say. We say a quick no is a gift on both sides, meaning that if someone brings me a deal and I know instantly I'm not a fit for it, the sooner I say no, thank you, the better. I don't waste any of that person's time. And so you want to get crystal clear on who you are as a real estate investor.
And that's really important, because it isn't just that the deal isn't a good deal. It could be a very good deal. It's just not the right deal for you. We say all the time, there are no problem properties, only problem ownerships. And this is the real challenge. And so when you're just getting started, everything looks good. And that's part of the exploration process. The fact that you're taking the time early on in your career, Mark, to begin to go through the process, and that's the reason we have it in the book, is so that you have a starting point that's closer to the mark. So when we talk to people about these types of things, we look at real estate investing in terms of fulfilling a mission. And it's an internal mission and an external mission. the personal investment philosophy is really about working on the internal mission. What is it you want the real estate to do for you? And it isn't just financial. It's how do you want to live? It's what type of demographics do you want to be involved with people? It's what type of product types do you find interesting? What kind of deals do you find interesting? And what type of markets? If you're investing outside of your home area, where would you like to travel to? Now, we're not saying that you're going to be able to find the perfect market, the perfect product, and perfect people where you get to have 100% of it your way. It's not Burger King. But if you thought about it ahead of time, then you have a much better chance of picking markets, product types, deal structures, and people that are all part of how you want to be living your life on a daily basis while you're making money.
Yeah, remember, this is about you and what you're trying to figure out as an investor. And then you go out and you try to find a match. And so specifically some examples, one of our continuums that we use when identifying personal investment philosophy is whether your primary goal is cash flow. I want to create a portfolio that pays me monthly or quarterly. Or growth of equity. I'm looking to collect real estate that goes up in value. And it's not that you can't have both. It's that we urge you to think about the focus where you are today in terms of the way you're going out and putting real estate in your portfolio. Am I interested in cash flow or equity? That very decision is going to dictate some markets that you may want to consider and certainly markets to stay away from. If I'm a cash flow investor, there's a lot of great markets across the U.S. and the world that make sense from a cash flow perspective, where the price to the rent ratio are strong and it makes sense for me to hold long term for the production of income. On the flip side of that, there are markets that are much more equity or growth driven. And so depending on my philosophy there, I may pick different markets. Same when it comes to the continuum of pride of ownership on one side and more difficult property profiles on the other. There's great opportunity in the lower end, but it's not for everybody. If you've identified yourself as a pride of ownership owner, then you're probably going to not want to invest in C-class apartments. There's a whole continuum on hands-on or hands-off. If you're a hands-off investor, maybe investing in someone else's syndication is a way to really come alongside a professional real estate investor, get the benefits of it without having to do all the work, because you're busy doing other things. So those are just some examples.
Yeah, I think, Robert, you hit the nail right on the head. You really have to kind of start off with the market. And what you're looking for in a market is, what has the market done in the past in terms of a trend? Where is it positioned today in terms of supply and demand? That is about people. That is about businesses. It's about jobs. It's about demand for real estate, typically. If you're in resort property investing, the demand is different than if you're in an industrial area. There's still demand. It's just coming from a different place. And so you learn to understand that. And then you have to ask yourself, are those supply and demand dynamics stable? Are they changing? What's the trend line? And then you can begin to determine if you think this is going to be more of an equity market where there's going to be a lot of demand relative to a constriction of supply, or maybe more of a cash flow market where things are pretty steady eddy. From there, you work on your product types, and there are definitely product types that cash flow better than others. Some of that is market cycles. Apartment cap rates have been very tight right now. That's because a lot of money has come into the space. People have bid the prices way up, meaning you're paying a lot for the same income. And with interest rates as low as they are, you can't necessarily count on lower interest rates to help you improve your cash flow. So you have to be really, really careful. Then again, there's other types of properties that we've talked about, niche properties, things like assisted living, things like mobile home parks, maybe even vacation properties that are catering to the affluent, where you have the opportunity to create greater cash flows, but they're a little bit of a niche product. And that floats into this idea of the kind of properties you want to be involved in, the kind of people you want to be involved in, who do you want to serve. So that, Mark, is how you take the concept of personal investment philosophy and what you're trying to accomplish in terms of markets, product types, management, all of those kind of things, and then begin to look at what's actually going on in a specific market and start to line those things up. You're not going to get it 100% before you go out in the real world and try. It's an iterative process. Concept of the personal investment philosophy and equity happens is to give you a starting point that's a lot closer to the mark than if you just took a dart out and threw it at a map.
And once you've done that, once you've gone through personal investment philosophy, now as you're looking at a market or a deal or a provider, a person that can help you out, it's going to be pretty clear whether or not there's a potential for a match, or more importantly, if it's obvious that there isn't. So it will take some time. And remember, in the real estate guy's world, we start with personal investment philosophy kind of at the top. Once you figure that out. Then you look for a market or markets, and that would include a product type within those markets. Then the next step is to find a team that can help you wherever those markets are in that particular type of property. And finally, the property. And back to Russ's point of who do you want to serve? A lot of us are in residential property because we know there's a lot of folks that need safe, clean, affordable housing. Some people don't want to deal with that. They'd rather invest in a triple net commercial lease because then their client is a business and that's just something they're more comfortable with. There's no right or wrong answer, but you're on a great path to trying to get it figured out and then applying that. That's the most important part, right? Education for effective action. Good question. Our next one comes from Chase in Dallas, Texas. He says, hey guys, love this show. Have a question given that I'm new to real estate investing. I have a condo about 20 minutes north of downtown Dallas, and I've recently rented it, but I'm about $200 cash flow negative each month. All in, my expenses are about $2,000. The rent's $1,800. This area is developing rapidly, and I anticipate some modest appreciation over the next few years. I realize that I qualify for the mortgage interest deduction each year. Based on his numbers, it's going to be about $6,000, he says. How should I think about keeping the property going forward versus selling it and cashing in on the small amount of equity I have in the property? Thank you for your advice, Chase. All right, well, not advice, just some ideas, but we've got some good ones for you because this is one of the age-old questions. Does it make sense to invest in a property that has negative cash flow?
Well, I think the first thing you have to ask yourself is, do you like the property and do you like the market? Because if you do, now you're just talking about the structure. Could be a financing structure, the rent structure, whatever it is. First question is do I like the market and do I like the property? From your comments there, Chase, it sounds like you do. So that's the first thing you have to figure out. You talked about the mortgage interest deduction, which is great. Yes, you do get that. You get that as a homeowner. You also get that as an investor, but you may have some additional tax breaks that you're not accounting for. So one of the things you're going to want to do is go meet with your tax advisor, preferably somebody who's experienced with real estate, and find out how converting it from owner occupancy to rental could potentially improve your tax situation, and you may be pleasantly surprised. So that's something you're going to want to take a look at.
Yeah, hey, before we leave that part of the equation, there's more we'll talk about here. Because it has been a residence, or at least we'll assume that based on the way that you've written the question, if it's been your residence, then you will have an opportunity at some point, according to U.S. tax law, to sell it if you've lived in it for two of the preceding 5 years and set aside the gain. That very tax break right there might influence you one way or the other as to selling. It doesn't sound like you have to make that decision right away since you've just recently rented it, meaning anytime in the next 3 years, you can still say it was your residence for the two of the last 5 years, if in fact those are the facts of the case. But it's one more thing to think about. So just in general, think about this. If you have a retirement plan, you're putting money away every month, and you're not getting any cash flow from it. It's negative cash flow. It's taking it away from you every month. But you do that because you're hoping that later in life, when you need the return, you'll have that money working for you. Well, an investment property with a little negative cash flow is exactly the same thing. It's like making an incremental $200 per month investment in a property that you expect to be worth more later on when you need it. So to me, the first math question is this property going up at least $2,400 of value a year? It's costing you $200 negative. If it's appreciating by $2,400, 200 times 12, then you are kind of a break even. And another big factor is when you sell, you have selling costs.
Yeah, that part's huge. And that's the part you really have to think about. I say all the time, do the math and the math will tell you what to do. And, you know, we're obviously talking about a lot of that right now. So you didn't say what this thing is worth, but kind of backing into the numbers, I'm guessing it's probably somewhere between $150,000 and $200,000. And if that's the case, let's just use $200,000 as a number. If you sell it and your sales costs are between 6 and 8%, that could be $12,000 to $18,000 of money that comes off your bottom line equity when you make the sale. And so whatever's left over after that would be your net proceeds, and that's what you would have to go forward with. So I don't know how much equity is in the property, but in any case, you know, to have to pay $12,000 to $16,000 to sell it, you can afford $200 a month or $2,400 a year for quite a while before you start hitting up into $12,000 to $16,000. You're saying you feel good about this area and the property long-term for appreciation? okay, it's a little bit of a gamble because you don't have direct control over that. Or maybe you do. Maybe you look at your condo compared to other condos in the area and say, hey, if I were to put a little bit of money in and remodel or create some extra amenity, and again, granted, with a condo, you don't have a lot of flexibility, but maybe some. Or maybe there's something going on in your particular development. Maybe you're part of the homeowners association and you can get them to do some things that would bring up the overall value. So it isn't like in this type of investment, you're completely out of control. And part of that is the rent. You can manage your cash flow from the standpoint of vacancy and turnover. And that's another thing to really think about. You know, you may be feeling a little bit of pressure with that $200 a month negative to try to raise the rent $50 to take a little bit of the sting off. But that might be a mistake, because if that $50 is enough to push your tenant out, now you've got vacancy and turnover, you've gone back and set yourself back 5 or 6 or 7 months based on $50 a month. So you might be better off, as Terry Kerr said in a show we did recently about how to keep your tenants happy, to be a little bit below the market in order to reduce your vacancy and turnover. So that's, as Robert was saying earlier, an investment. If you're losing, say, $50 a month, but you're basically looking at that as an investment in making your tenant happy, you're reducing your vacancy and turnover costs. If somebody stays 2 or 3 years instead of just 6 months or a year, losing $50 a month when you look at what it costs you to turn over and deal with vacancy. So there's a little bit of math here to do. Two other things in math to think about here, Chase, is the cash flow is not necessarily profit and loss. You're also getting some pay down on your loan every month that's coming from the tenant money. So that's profit to you, even though you don't feel it, your cash flow. That's something to think about. That's on the positive side. On the negative side, you really didn't talk too much about what your expenses are, although I'm guessing with a condo, you probably don't have a lot of expenses, you know, as far as deferred maintenance and things like that, maybe a little bit, but you don't normally have the same things that you would have if it was a single family home, because you have some common area stuff that's being taken care of by the HOA.
Well, the other side of that, though, is you were talking earlier about the things you have control over. And when I'm thinking HOA, I'm thinking you don't have much control. In fact, it's one of the reasons why, all things being equal, I might steer folks away from anywhere where there's a condominium or homeowners association, only because the associations across the U.S. at least are notoriously underfunded. What happens is nobody ever wants to vote yes on an increase in dues. And yet usually the folks that are managing that part of it are going to make that recommendation for a really good reason, like, hey, we're not going to have enough money to replace the roof when it comes due, or we're spending a lot more than we thought in landscaping and the place has to look good. And so if I'm looking at those condo fees, those can go up, affecting your cash flow without necessarily an offsetting benefit. Hey, we're putting away more money so that we don't have to come out of pocket paving the driveway in 5 years, right? That doesn't give you any tangible benefit today, but it will in the long run. So just watch those condo fees. That's the only thing I would say about that. So good stuff. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. More questions when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys Radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
If you've been listening to the Real Estate Guys for a while, then you've heard about the legendary Investor Summit. Simply put, it's the highest level event we do, and the content, faculty, and attendees are amazing. If you're serious about taking your real estate investment to the next level, consider joining us. You'll spend an entire week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals, and you'll have a blast. It all begins April 1st, 2017 in Houston, Texas. Some alumni have already booked 60% of the cabins, but public registration is now open. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click on the tab that says Summit to learn more. We spend 2 days on land, learning, and networking, then jump aboard a luxury cruise ship for 6 more days of classes, roundtable discussions, great dinner conversations, and a ton of fun. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and make plans to spend a week with the Real Estate Guys and an all-star faculty on the 15th Annual Investors Summit at Sea.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Hi, this is Anthony Melchiori from Hotel Impossible, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station all the time at realestateguysradio.com. It's not too late to get your life in order at the Create Your Future Goals Retreat. Happens the first weekend in San Diego. It is filling up nicely, but there's a chair or two left. You can get all the details on the website at realestateguysradio.com under events. It's Ask the Guys today, your questions and our answers. This question comes from Fred in Burlingame, California. He says, hey guys, is it a good idea to have a third-party inspector look at a newly constructed home before closing? And part two of his question, what about getting the inspection after closing? Would the builder be liable to fix any issues that are found by the inspector? All right, two great questions about home inspections. And the first is absolutely, positively, yes. We think it's an excellent idea to have a third party inspect a home anytime it transfers ownership. You never know what's lurking. Even a seller who pays attention to their property may not see or know everything, which is why for a few $100s, typically, you can get a professional contractor to come out and take a look with a non-biased eye. So big, big believers in that. Now, sometimes people say, well, it's a brand new home. You know, there's a builder's home warranty. If there's anything wrong, the builder's going to fix it. And what really could have gone wrong? Well, only 100 different things. As someone who understands real estate development, I'll tell you, most properties are not built by a general contractor. They're built by a series of subcontractors who were supervised, hopefully, by the general contractor, and their work gets put together in such a way that sometimes stuff gets missed. So I'm a big proponent of getting an inspection done, even if the property's brand new.
Well, again, it's just a matter of return on investment and insurance. You know, how much insurance do you want to have? When you're talking about buying something $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, to spend a few hundred dollars to make sure that you really know what you got, it's no different. If you were going to go buy a car, would you take it down to a third-party inspector just to make sure you didn't buy a lemon? It's the same principle. And yes, I totally agree. It's cheap insurance to make sure that you know exactly what you've got, and you've got a third party looking at it who doesn't have a agenda other than just to give you the best advice possible.
Now, back when I was selling real estate, my very first listings were on brand new houses, and I'll tell you, there were folks who didn't ever get the inspection because they figured it was a new home, and that was fine. But when people did, my builder owner was great about it. They were actually appreciative of the fact that an inspector found something, often something that had to be repaired on more than one of their houses, and not usually huge issues, but certainly something that you would want to have done. And again, most builders are going to bend over backwards to fix it. That may not be true in an arm's length used home situation, depending on motivation and the market and all those things. A lot of times it's, hey, take it as it is and just get the inspection done because you want to know what the deal is. Builders are going to be a lot more pliable. What about getting the inspection after the closing? Well, I would say, why would you wait? Why not do it beforehand? Do it before the closing so you have leverage. If you haven't done an inspection and you've closed, it can't hurt to have your home inspected again. Our practice when we were selling real estate was always to encourage sellers to have a home inspection done before they put the home on the market. And sometimes they'd say, well, but that's usually a buyer's expense. Why not let the buyer do that? Well, because don't you want to know in advance what might be wrong with your home? And again, to Russ's point, for a few $100, not very much in the grand scheme of things, you can have a third party come in and tell you the condition. And sometimes you're going to find something you'd have to fix anyway. Why not fix it and now have it as something new to tout? Hey, brand new tile shower. Where before you were going to have an old 30-year-old tile shower that had to be repaired to equal or higher standards. Well, you might decide to downgrade a little, but have something brand new. So a lot of reasons to get an inspection done on either side. Now, specifically your question about would the builder be liable to fix any issues that are found by the inspector? Well, that's a big old, that depends. Typically, a new home construction company is going to stand by its work. There's going to be an implied builder's warranty depending on jurisdiction. But it really depends, right? We had a bunch of folks who were investing in properties down in Mexico. And in Mexico, there was no idea that the builder was responsible after the close of escrow. So those folks better make sure that they have any inspections done up front so they understand what the situation is. Now, a reputable builder or developer, sure, they're going to want to take care of you as a client. They understand that they need to keep you happy, that you're going to provide referrals if they've done a good job and those kinds of things, but you'd never know who's going to be liable. And then finally, there are developers that go out of business just all the time. So a warranty is as good as the company behind it. If you're buying from a big, storied, long-term history, reputable builder, you're probably fine. But a lot of properties are built by little moms and pops, and sometimes they have financial issues, they have personal issues, and if there's nothing to go after, you don't have much to go by. So, great question, Fred. Thanks for that. Our next question comes from Jill in Napa, California. All right, a couple from California. Hey guys, love the show. Here are my questions. To begin communicating with someone for owner financing on a house that's not listed, do you recommend sending a letter or should you call directly? What should be included in your first point of contact? And what are the things you should avoid saying? Any other things I should have asked about when getting started with owner financing? Thank you very much for your help. You guys rock, Jill. All right, Jill. Well, first of all, love owner financing. It can be a great, great tool. However, if I'm looking to find a property where the owner might be interested in carrying back and it's not listed yet, a single family house, as you mentioned, I'm not sure I start with that. First, I want to see is their seller motivation, because here's a premise for owner financing. If you can get the owner to finance, you usually aren't paying points, you can negotiate a great interest rate, they're familiar with the collateral, they may be less reliant on credit score and those kinds of things. So a lot of great reasons for it. But typically when a seller is considering doing the financing, they're doing that at a premium, meaning they're take a cash discount on a house maybe if you can close quickly. But if on the other hand you're asking for terms, there's a very good chance that you're going to be expected to pay close to list price. I use that as an advantage. I can go to the seller and say, I have a way for you to get exactly what you want out of the house and not have to take a big discount like the rest of the neighbors are taking. Would you be interested in discussing that? And of course, the reality is if they were going to sell, the number one question you get in a conversation with is, hey, what are you going to do when you sell? What are you going to do with the money? If they have an absolute need or use for the money, then you're going to have a hard time negotiating a seller carry. On the other hand, if they go, yeah, I'm just going to throw it in the bank and collect interest on it, now you got something to talk about.
So I think all that's great. And I think the key thing, Robert, that you brought up, and Jill, you also brought this up as a key, is any other things I should have asked? It's always asking. We'd really encourage you to come to our sales training, How to Win Funds and Influence People, because we teach you the art of how to ask questions. When you understand what the other party is trying to accomplish and you position everything that you have or want to get as somehow fitting into their agenda of what they want to get, you're much more likely to strike a deal. You know, Robert and I have had this privilege to spend a lot of time recently with a gentleman named George Ross, who has been on the show, and he spent over four decades as Donald Trump's personal real estate attorney, did many, many deals together. And now he does these monthly calls. And on these talks with George, what comes up all the time is all these questions about negotiation. And even though each individual question is different based on the terms of the deal and the topic of the question that the person is asking, the answer is almost always the same. And that is that you have to get to know what the other party wants, make it all about them, and position whatever it is you're offering in such a way to meet their needs. And that's the same thing too with owner financing. So, you know, you said, should I begin communicating with a letter? only to get the conversation started. You certainly do not want to propose owner financing. You do not want to propose whatever it is you want or are trying to get to outside of the context of you having a great understanding of what they want and what they're trying to get to. So a letter or any pre-approach would be purely to get the conversation started so that you can get engaged in a personal relationship and then begin to ask questions to find out what they're trying to do, when they're trying to do it, what they need, and how you can craft a deal that meets their needs.
You know, my 18 years of selling real estate with the godfather of real estate, my dad, he was very successful in getting owners to consider carrying back financing, but it wasn't where we started. Very few sellers would come to the table with, hey, I want to sell my house and carry. He had to forge that relationship and broach the question with them, and he did it in such a way that it made sense depending on their needs. He would only bring it up if, in fact, their situation warranted it, and I'm going to suggest the same thing for you. Just because you want to buy with owner financing doesn't mean that the seller has any interest in that, but they might, and rarely have I found sellers lead with that. Instead, what are they interested in? Getting rid of the property for some reason.
Well, I mean, Robert, the bigger deal is they don't even understand. I mean, a lot of them don't even know it's an option. They certainly don't understand the benefits. And even if you get to the point where you can see where it's totally right for them and how great it is for them, it doesn't matter if you see it. It only matters if they see it. And this is the art of negotiation. How do you get someone to see their own need, even though you can see it? How do you ask them questions in such a way that they understand it so that when you present your solution, they understand it in the context of needs that they're aware of? A lot of times when people are talking to you about what they want or what they're trying to do, they don't even know what they're saying. They don't understand that they're communicating to you something. And then you see it, and a inexperienced salesperson is going to go for the throat and try to close before they fully develop the awareness of the needs in the minds of the prospect. And that is a key component in great sales technique. So I'd encourage you to come out to the training. I think you can get the information on the next class by sending an email to sales@realestateguysradio.com. We'll put you on the list. And when we open up the doors for registration, we will let you know.
You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys Radio program. Today it's Ask the Guys, Your Questions, Our Answers. When we come back, we're going to ask you a question for real estate trivia. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, just go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. More questions next.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms, and if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits, the beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life. Wall Street and banks spend billions of dollars per year in advertising with the goal to convince you that they are the solution. But take a look around. None of their advice has worked. The number one concern of all Americans is still money. So are you ready for another way? I've spent the last 10 years teaching people like you a superior way to build wealth and financial independence outside of Wall Street. I've developed a free e-learning program called Infinite 101, where you can learn about the perpetual wealth strategy. In this free program, you'll learn how to build your wealth without a 401k, IRA, or mutual funds. You'll also learn how to establish private financing without ever having to walk into a bank again. These are just two of the many ways this free program can propel you toward financial independence. Simply go to paradigmlife.net and click on the register button on the top right corner of the page to gain instant access.
Hi, this is Lawrence Yun, Chief Economist with National Association of Realtors, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
And welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show, and happy holidays to you. It's our final edition of Ask the Guys for the year. We are taking your great real estate questions and giving you our answers. Before we get back to the questions, it's time to play Real Estate Trivia, where we ask you a question that has something to do with real estate, and in this case, the holidays. And when you hear the question and think you know the answer, just send us an email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name, the answer to the question, and your physical mailing address. Because if you're the winner, we're going to send you a copy of Robert Kiyosaki's latest book, Second Chance. That can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week on the show, we were talking about real estate as a safe haven asset. And we asked this: which three U.S. states have both a Federal Reserve Bank and a U.S. Mint? Well, the answer is California, New York, and Pennsylvania. Speaking of U.S. states, here's our real estate trivia question for this week. In the holiday classic Home Alone, the McAllister family leave for vacation to France, but they leave their young son Kevin behind. Here's what I want to know. In what state do the McAllisters live? Yeah, that beautiful Home Alone house. Where is that house? What state is the movie shot in? Not only is the house actually there, but it's also the setting for the movie. So if you think you know or want to take a guess, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com and be sure to include your mailing address so we can send you a copy of Second Chance by Robert Kiyosaki. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're taking your questions today for Ask the Guys. This next question comes from Jake in Mooresville, North Carolina. He says, "Dear Real Estate Guys, I just wanted to say that I've been listening to your podcast and I love it, really helping me learn as a young investor. I was wondering if I could get a direct email or phone number to ask some questions. Let me know." All right, Jake. Well, as much as we would love to talk to you and all the listeners, it is simply impractical for us to be able to do that. So the short answer is no, but it doesn't mean that it's completely off limits, because a thing Russ and I love more than anything else is to interact with our listeners. And the best way to do that is to come out to a live event.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, the summit is actually the best. It's a big pop, but boy, talk about quality relationships, not just with us, but with these amazing faculty members, and a whole week on the ship and lots of casual talk time with investors from all around the world. It's very expensive, but it's a crash course in real estate investing and networking. With that said, the idea that you do want to talk to people and bounce ideas, I mean, I think that's fabulous, Jake, and that's exactly what you need to do. So if you're not already participating in a local investment club, find one. Or if you can't find one, maybe start one. We did a paper on that some time ago, which you can get if you send an email to club@realestateguysradio.com, and gives you some tips that we had. We've started a number of clubs in our history, and they're great. It's a great chance to get together with people, share ideas. When you get big enough, you can invite guest speakers to come in and enhance the learning. That's how we got started. Maybe even get to the point where you want to do some deals together. Be careful, learn the rules, but that is a lot of clubs, you know, get together and do deals together. So it can be a great, great, great way to accelerate your learning. So good for you being a young guy out there listening to shows like this. Keep filling your mind with good ideas. And then remember our motto: education for effective action. Go do something.
And coming out to a live event, and we'd be happy to sit around over a beer and talk real estate for pretty much as long as we can. Here's our next question. It comes from Sunny in Virginia Beach, Virginia. "Hey guys, I don't use iTunes and I have to download the podcast via the website in order to listen to it. It would be great if you could also put the podcast on Google Play." Done. All right. There you go, Sunny. We are now Google Play. So for all you Android owners, you can go there. Lots of places you can find our podcast, but we're available on iTunes and Google Play. Number next, this question comes from Tamara in Seattle, Washington. She says, "Hi there. We're selling a rental property and are interested in doing a 1031 tax deferred exchange. However, we wanted to add an additional unit to the property so we could have a place to stay when we come to town. I recently found out that the IRS doesn't allow this. Is that true? I'd love to hear your thoughts. We're building spec homes, so I'd like to use the sale proceeds for new construction. However, I'm trying to be tax savvy, and the 1031 seems like the best way to mitigate taxes. Thanks." All right. Well, the 1031 tax deferred exchange is a great real estate tax saving tool. However, a quick reminder that neither Russ or I are tax professionals, so make sure you get some real tax advice about this. But you're right. Unfortunately, that is true. Part of what a 1031 tax deferred exchange, and that's just the ability to move your proceeds into the future buy another property before being taxed. It's limiting the tax you pay now. It can even zero out the tax you pay when you sell a property, provided you follow some rules, which are essentially that all the money goes into your replacement property, what we call your upleg. The downleg property is the property you're selling, or relinquishing is the terminology they use. The upleg property is the property you're buying. So could you live in one of the units even a day? No, not really. That doesn't qualify for 1031 tax deferred exchange. It's really a tool for what we call like-for-like property. And that's a big category, but generally anything held for the production of income is going to be a like property in the U.S. And you can do a 1031 tax deferred exchange as a U.S. citizen in other countries as well. If I own a property in Mexico and want to exchange into a property in Bolivia, I can do that. You just can't exchange from U.S. property to an international property or vice versa. Again, like for like.
So I'll just chime in with a couple of thoughts. First, I think Robert hit this, always use an experienced real estate tax advisor. Not all tax advisors have a lot of experience in real estate. So when you're out there shopping for a tax advisor, pick somebody that actually invests in real estate themselves and advises other real estate investors. They're going to have their head squarely in the game. Another thing is you might want to read Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright. It's a book in our recommended reading area on our website under the Resources tab. Great place to learn the basics, and then you create what you think is your best plan based on what you know, and then you run it by your advisor. And when you go talk to a tax advisor, one of the things that we've learned over the years is instead of asking, can I do this, you have to ask them, how can I do this? Because if you say, can I do this? These guys are very orderly in the way they think. They're very binary, kind of like tech people. They think in yes and no. And so if you say, can I, they're going to answer yes or no. But if you say, how can I, you unleash their creativity, hopefully, and they start to brainstorm with you on a way that you could do it. You didn't say why you were selling the property, but sometimes, and I've made this mistake in the past, I've sold properties because I was trying to unleash the equity. It wasn't because I didn't want the property anymore. I just wanted access to the equity, and I just presumed that I had to sell it to get to it. But in today's world, you can refinance properties and pull equity out that way. So 1031 tax deferred exchanges are a way to reposition equity from one property to another through a sale, but a cash out refinance is also a way that you can reposition equity from one property to another. And you can do that without relinquishing the original property, or at least not relinquishing the original property today. You may decide, hey, I want to get this equity out so I can go do what I want to go do. And then 2 years from now, I'll sell the property and I'll do the 1031 tax deferred exchange. And this is where it can be helpful to sit down with your tax advisor and work out the timing. So maybe separate the idea of what you want to do with the proceeds from the act of selling the property, and then sit down with your tax advisor and say, how can I get access to the money so that I can go do this thing that I want to do today and yet still preserve my capital gains for the 1031 tax deferred exchange? Maybe if I waited a year or two, sometimes you can do it that way. So take a look at that.
All right, great question, Tamara. More questions when we come back. It's Ask the Guys today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
If you want to retire in the next 5 years or less through real estate, then please pay close attention. My name is Brad Sumrock, and I've taught thousands of my students how to replace their incomes, quit their jobs, and retire faster than they ever thought possible by not investing in single-family homes. You see, there's a secret to retiring fast with little risk, and it has nothing to do with being a landlord, fixing toilets, or flipping houses. The secret is multifamily apartment buildings. Starting from scratch with zero experience, I managed to pocket over $1 million in cash and retire from my 17-year corporate job within 3 years of apartment investing. Now, this is not your typical no-money-down real estate training. We believe in smart, hard work for intelligent people. So if you're good with your finances, have a decent job, or saving your money, and you're looking for a change and getting out of the rat race, then investing in apartment buildings might just be the answer you've been looking for. Send an email right now to Sumrock at realestateguysradio.com to get the details of my upcoming training event, and you'll also receive my free training webinar, Apartment Investing for Beginners. That's Sumrock, S-U-M-R-O-K, at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Kim Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Woman, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show, and thanks for your great questions. If you have a question for The Real Estate Guys, we'll have another Ask the Guys show early in the new year. Just go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys and fire away. We love listeners' questions, and we get so many. We really focus on the ones that we think will apply to a lot of folks, and we'll veer now and then. We've got a couple of really great questions today. It doesn't look like we'll get time for, but we love your questions and we love to answer them. This one comes from Paula in DeKalb, Illinois. She says, I just returned from Belize on a scouting mission that I had arranged before I heard about your trips. I'm sorry that I missed out on your field trip, but I have a few questions. Well, we're sorry too, but if you are interested in Belize, we've got another trip in the new year. She says, can you comment on investing from the perspective of the time cost of money? By that, I mean that the rate of construction in Belize can be somewhat slow, hampered by politics, etc. What has your experience been in developing from the ground up? Everyone says an international airport is going into Ambergris Key, but when? Does that mean the north side of the key is potentially more valuable? How does Ambergris compare to Placentia, which I did not get a chance to visit? Also, I saw a lot of debris along the roadsides and beaches, some from the storm, but most look rather permanent. Do travelers simply overlook that? I found myself less bothered by it as I relaxed in paradise, but do others feel the same way? As an investor, I worry about how my potential renters would view San Pedro. Thanks for any input you can give. I appreciate your time. Well, my goodness, we would have covered that and so much more on the field trip, so we're definitely sorry you weren't there, but I can comment on some of these things for sure. First of all, yeah, Belize is not the fastest place in the world to experience construction. Part of it is the whole island time mentality, and then part of it is, especially in Ambergris Key, the market you mentioned, everything has to be barged in, and that takes time. In addition, in Ambergris Key, you not only have to have plans for development approved by the Ministry of Lands in Belmopan, the capital of Belize, but you also have to have the San Pedro Town Council approve anything you want to do, so it takes a little longer from that point of view. There are a few developers, however, that have really streamlined the process and are building quite quickly, and we show you those on the Belize field trip. As far as the airport up north, we joke on the Belize field trip that anytime someone asks the question when, they're obviously not from Belize. Belizeans don't necessarily have a ironclad agenda or calendar, but stuff does get done there. And I've heard a lot of talk about the international airport going into the north part of Ambergris Key. And as someone that's been visiting and investing in Belize for over a decade, I'll just tell you that I am still breathing in and out, which means I'm not holding my breath. If you listen closely to what the Prime Minister said about that airport, he did say that an international airport was going in. He did not say it would be a commercial airport. And talking to the authorities there, both on the commercial airline side and the local carriers, I'm not guessing we're going to see that for quite a while. So in my personal investment philosophy in Belize, I don't give a lot of credence to that, although I certainly hope it happens, and the demand will be there one day. It's just not yet. Where do you know of an international flight going in to a market that has less than 25,000 people? There are some, but not very many. Finally, on trash, well, I will tell you this. The land that is not developed, often the trash accumulates, but there are several times a year when the locals put together these big trash bash events and they go out and they clean up. I certainly haven't seen a lot of trash there, although I will tell you, those of us that grew up in the United States, there was a big campaign to keep America beautiful. Earlier this year, when one of the Dallas field trip, we saw all the don't mess with Texas signs, same kind of idea, trying to instill in folks the fact that you should pick up after yourself. Not every country feels that way, and the Belize culture hasn't been that, although it's starting to change. We don't see any big challenge from the point of view of tourists not coming or people not spending time there. In fact, this year, the market has been incredibly strong. In 2016, for at least two quarters, Belize was the number one increasing market in all of the Caribbean, which is crazy, right? It's a Central American country, but it's also in the Caribbean Sea, and it's one of the members of the Caribbean Tourism Organization. It's the only Central American country that is. And so there's been huge increase in uptake in tourism, and that translates to investment returns. So I would say that it's something to be aware of, but not something I'm too worried about.
So I have three comments for you, Paula. The first one is about your concern about how potential renters would view San Pedro. You know, are other people overlooking it? Robert knows the stats better than me, but tourism has largely been on the grow there, so it hasn't hindered people from coming in and wanting to stay in San Pedro. I think what you experience relaxing in paradise is what people come for, and once you're there, you get kind of get over the rest of it. That's one thing. The second thing is more generic. For anybody who's interested in Belize, who really wants to go discover any market, but especially a foreign market, going on a scouting mission is great. And if you can get a guided tour with somebody that knows a market like the back of their hand, you know, when it comes to Belize, you couldn't do better than going on a trip with Robert. Robert wouldn't tell you this, but I'll tell you this. He's probably the most informed person about the Belizean real estate market than anybody on earth. He's certainly in the top five. So when you spend time with him, you're going to learn a lot about that market and how it really works, especially Ambergris Key. Now, the other thing is more generic. The idea is that when you're investing in a country, it does take some extra homework. It's like the first time you go out of state. It takes a little bit of extra homework. The flip side of that is in any venture, when there's a barrier to entry that makes it more difficult to get in, then you're limiting the number of people who are doing it. And by definition, there's less competition for the available opportunities. So we obviously look for those types of opportunities because we're willing to outwork the other folks. We're willing to go places where other people aren't willing to go. We've been going to Belize for 10 years. Some people say, gosh, you were early. Well, yeah, rather be early than late. But we can tell you there's still plenty of room. And that's what's exciting. So we feel like there's a lot of opportunities still remaining there. And there's other markets that are like that. The key is, and you know, Paula, I'm preaching to the choir with you, because you've done it. But for anybody else out there thinking, wow, that's crazy. You go to a whole, you know, travel to a country all by yourself just to look around at real estate. Yeah, that's how you do it. That's the nature of real estate. It's one of the things that I had to learn being a guy, kind of a desk jockey, guy that likes to look at facts and figures and crunch numbers and do research and talk about theory. And Robert would grab me kicking and screaming and take me out to go look at properties and walk through apartment buildings and do all kinds of crazy things that I would have never done in 1,000 years. And one of the things that we did at the Real Estate Guy would say, how can we recreate that for as many people as possible? And that's why we do the field trip. So if you want to see where we're going and things that are going on in our world, make sure you visit the Real Estate Guys website at realestateguysradio.com. Look under events. And if we have a trip there, you can register for it. If not, then you can get on advance notice list for the next time we do schedule the trip to the markets that are shown.
Come see beautiful Belize in February. All the details and dates on our website at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for your question, Paul. This one comes from Gary in Austin, Texas. He says, I owe $100,000 with 8 years remaining on a property that is appraised at $167,000. It's my primary residence, and I'm thinking about doing a 30K cash out refinance to buy a couple of turnkey properties in Memphis. What scares me is that I'm gaining almost $1,000 in principal pay down by doing nothing, and not to mention paying off the house in 8 years, but I'm okay trying to be financially free in this scenario, not debt free. All right, so great question. Here's what happens. Over time, as you pay down your loan, more and more and more goes to the principal. Say you get a 30-year amortized loan. Those early payments are almost all interest. It doesn't affect the loan balance very much. But if you're down to where you only have 8 years left, you're going to be paying principal. And this is a critical thing to understand that I don't think everyone gets. That's every time you refinance, the clock starts over. And I think our financial strategist can speak to that.
Oh, yeah. I you know, as you know, Robert, I did for years a 3-hour seminar called Managing Your Mortgage for Maximum Net Worth. And we would dive into amortization tables and I would show people how that worked. At the same time, I would explain to them why it was nothing to be afraid of. Because first of all, what you're also losing there, Gary, is the mortgage interest deduction. You're paying principal, and that's not a deduction to you. You are reducing your debt, but you're doing it with your own money. So you're not doing nothing. You're going to work and you're paying your taxes, and then you're using after-tax money to build up that equity. So the idea of repositioning equity so that it can be put to work for you is not necessarily a bad thing. With that said, there's nothing wrong with having your primary residence 100% paid for. So I'm a big fan of either having your property 100% paid for or 100% leveraged. Because if you're 100% paid for, nobody has a claim on your property except the tax man and a potential litigant. And you can use some structures to protect yourself from those plaintiffs. And of course, insurance plays a role there. If you're 100% leverage, you're not a very appealing target for anyone that would want to go after you for any reason, because you don't appear to have any money, at least not in the property. And certainly a lender is going to be more inclined to want to work with you if you were to get in trouble on your payments, because there's no equity for them to go after. So now the question is once you've got the equity out of the property, what do you do with it? Well, a lot of that depends on what's going on in the market. You're talking about a couple of turnkeys in Memphis. Memphis is a great cash flow market. And this is just a matter of sitting down with a calculator, a pencil, and a couple of sheets of paper, and probably an eraser, and doing a lot of math, because that's what you got to do. If I can borrow money out of a property at 4% and earn an 8% cash on cash on an investment, plus have a chance for some equity buildup and tax deductions through depreciation, you start doing the math on that, and that looks pretty good. You could be earning 12 to 20% on that 4% money when you net it all out. So that's not too bad. If you're concerned about the direction of the market and think, well, you know, maybe I'm buying in at the top of the market, you might invest on the debt side. You might make a hard money loan, maybe 8%. If you can borrow 4% money and invest it out, a piece of it at 8%, put another piece into equity on a property, you can end up having positive cash flow. You can use the positive cash flow to continue to pay down your existing residence. Not that I would do that, but you could. Or you could just accumulate the cash offline somewhere so that you had the ability to pay the loan down at any time you wanted to. But the value, the equity of the property, isn't in the property. It's in your safe or in your bank account. And that gives you a little bit more flexibility, because if the market were to pull back, it takes your equity with you. Now, you do run the risk of being upside down on your property, but if it's your personal residence and you're committed to making the payments, who cares? I don't care if I'm upside down in a property that I'm living in and I'm enjoying and I can easily make the payments in. I care where it's going to be in 20 or 30 years from now, or at whatever point in time I choose to sell it. So there's no really right or wrong. You mentioned the word scared. I'm scared. Well, you know, you should never do anything that you're afraid of, but sometimes fear comes from lack of understanding. So start out with just eliminating the fear, and don't feel like you have to do anything other than just learn what your options are, do the math, and then take calculated risks and work with your advisors to make sure that your assumptions are correct on the tax side, on the mortgage side, on the income side, on the property. Just make sure you understand the risks and the rewards, and then make a good business decision.
One other thing to consider is, if you don't want to give up the fact that you're paying down so much principal, is a second loan of some kind. Could you get a HELOC, a home equity line of credit against the property? Or is there someone that would loan you a second loan? Obviously, that might be at a higher interest rate, but if it accomplishes what you want, which is buying a couple of properties in Memphis, which, all things being equal, is a pretty good rental market, then maybe that works for you. Again, do the math, and the math will tell you what to do. All right, great questions. We had more in the mailbag and couldn't quite get to them, but that's all right. We've got another edition of Ask the Guys coming in the new year. Until now and then, get your questions in by going to realestateguysradio.com and click on Ask the Guys. Have a wonderful, safe, and happy holiday season. We'll see you next week on the Real Estate Guys radio program. Until then, be sure to go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys radio show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.